Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is called Toldot. It is from Genesis 25, verse 19 to 28, verse 9. And the Haftarah is Malachi, starting at chapter 1, verse 1, to Malachi chapter 2, verse 7. The Brit Hadashah is Romans 9, verses 1 to 31. And before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech haolam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe. Thank you for inviting us to keep your Shabbat. Abba, I pray that your words will be spoken and that mine will not. But if mine are spoken, I pray they will die and that yours will live. I ask that you will bless everyone who on this planet is obeying your Torah and is keeping your Shabbats and your feasts and are people of the tent like Jacob. I thank you and praise you in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Okay, let's go to Toldot. We start in Genesis chapter 25 at verse 19. It says, "And these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac." Now, you know, when we ended the last Torah portion, it ends with the generations of Ishmael, who also is called Abraham's son, but it qualifies that he's the son through Hagar. Yet, here in Genesis 25:19, it says, "These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac," and it doesn't qualify that this is the promised son that comes through Sarah. The reason is because the Bible has to make a distinction between the bondwoman's son and the free woman's son, you see. And so Hagar's son, Ishmael, she is the bondwoman, and Sarah's son, Isaac, came from the free woman. And so that's why you have the listing of Ishmael at the end of Chaye Sarah, because we're getting the generations of Hagar out of the way. And now we're going to start with the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son, who was begotten by Sarah. And it said, "And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife." And you remember in the last Torah portion that Eliezer, Abraham's servant, went to Laban's family and brought Rebekah back for Isaac. And it says here that he was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, and Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. Now, it makes it sound there like, you know, she was, you know, wanting to get pregnant right away when Isaac was 40 years old. Later on in verse 26, we're going to find out that she did not get pregnant until he was 60 or 59 years old, and then the children Esau and Jacob were born when Isaac was 80 years old or 60 years old. So in the meantime, in that intervening 20 years, somewhere in there, Isaac had to entreat the Lord for his wife. What does entreat mean? It means that he went and talked to the Lord. And here we have that the Lord was entreated of him. In other words, the Lord heard Isaac and was entreated of him, or answered his prayer, and Rebekah conceived these children. Now, these children are the same kind of children as Cain and Abel. We're going to have a repeat starting right here of the problems between Cain and Abel. And they start out as two seeds that struggled within Rebekah's womb. And she went to inquire of the Lord. Now see, there's a difference between being entreated, which is the word athar or atar, which means to burn incense in worship or to intercede seed. But when it says that she went to inquire, she went to seek or ask. Now, what is the difference between entreating and inquiring? Well, when you go to intercede, you're interceding for someone else. When you go on your own behalf, you are inquiring, you see. And of course, the Lord told her, you've got two nations in there. There are two different kinds of people coming forth from you. Now, why would it be that the Lord would make it this way? Because, you know, the Lord has control over everything. Well, the Lord is making a very black and white statement here. He's saying the whole earth is going to have a choice between two nations. Two nations. Now, we say that the Gentiles have 70 nations, but literally what the Lord is, he's dividing up the earth into two very black and white categories, Hebrews and Gentiles. And we're going to see this all the way through the rest of the scriptures, all the way through Revelation, that there really are only two kinds of people on the earth today. There were only two kinds of people from this time forward. Actually, it was from Abraham forward when he became the first Hebrew. But now the Lord is making it official that two nations are going to be coming forth from Rebecca. One of them is going to represent all those other Gentile nations, and the other is going to represent all of the Hebrew tribes, you see. And so he's making it possible for there to be this process whereby when we get down to the final analysis of it, down to the end of days, well, at some point, it's going to be a black and white choice. You're either going to go with Esau or you're going to go with Jacob. And right here in Genesis 25:23 is this dividing line. He's telling her, these two nations are coming out of your womb. By the way, as we go through the rest of the Torah portions, we're going to find out that Esau did exactly what I'm telling you he did. He went and usurped three nations. Which three nations am I talking about? Well, he usurped Babylon. He usurped the Horite king over there at Mount Seir. And he is going to go and usurp Ishmael's, what could have been Ishmael's nation, because, you know, we had Ishmael had 12 sons as well, and they could have been a nation, but Esau usurped that right away. We're going to get that in the Torah. And then later on in history, in the writings, we find out that Esau has also usurped Greece, and he has also usurped Rome, till here in the end of days, Greece and Rome and now Babylon are all associated with Esau. And so he literally became the head of the Gentile nations. If you're going to continue to be a Gentile, you're going to be put into the Esau camp. One of the things I want to just kind of go down a rabbi trail here. I hear a lot of believers say, oh, I'm just a Gentile, you know, believer in the Lord. No, you're not. And you need to stop saying that. Because if you claim to be a Gentile, then you're on Esau's side. You need to be saying, I once was a Gentile, but like Abraham, I became a Hebrew. And you need to be able to say and identify with being a Hebrew, because, and I'm telling you, this is not a little thing. If believers cannot identify with being Hebrew, they cannot identify with being Israel. And there's coming a time that's going to test their beliefs. And I wonder how many believers, when it comes down to the final analysis, are going to make the wrong choice. You know, the book of Revelation is written to Hebrews. It's not written to Gentiles. And yet in there, it says that there's going to be a choice, implying that some will make that wrong choice. And so we need to start to do this paradigm shift of not calling ourselves Gentiles, not calling ourselves Esau. We need to start to identify with biblical Israel, the nation that we're going to inherit. And by the way, it wouldn't hurt if right now you just went ahead and say, you know, the Jews that are living in the political state of Israel, those are my brethren from another tribe. It wouldn't hurt you at all to be able to say that. In fact, it will help you spiritually to identify with who is your family. You see, we've got to get our family identification thing going, and it's going to be important for us when all hell breaks loose in this country and all over the earth, you see. And so we need to make sure that we understand that the Bible only has two kinds of people. Now, lots of nations are mentioned by name, but those nations all fit into one of two categories, either Gentile or Hebrew. And it says here in verse 24, when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, there were twins in her womb. And of course, we know that Esau came out red, and it's going to become a hallmark for him all down through the ages, through the next 4,000 years. And as I have identified in other teachings, red is the color of secular Esau, which we call communism. Red is the color, of course, of blood, which Islam is very fond of. Red was the color of Muhammad's coloring. And by the way, it says he was also like a hairy garment. You know, he came out all hairy, and they called his name Esau. If you notice, Muslim men are often very hairy, although I've seen a lot of other men who are very hairy. Now, by the way, I'm not saying that if a man is a hairy man, that he's an Edomite. In the beginning, the Lord had to separate Esau from Jacob and Jacob from Esau by giving us markers to look for later on, constantly reminding us that Esau was red and hairy. Okay, that doesn't mean that down here at the end of the days, even 400 years later or so, whenever King David was born, you know, we couldn't identify Edomites by being red and hairy. You see, we can't do that. And we can't do that here 4,000 years later. But the Lord has to give us these clues about redness and hairiness, because these are spiritual attributes that we can look for. That hairiness has to do with the he-goat. And I've got a teaching called The Kingdom of Edom, The Enemy We Face, when I go all through this and teaching you how Esau is associated with the he-goat. And who is the he-goat? It is Greece. And then we have associations with Rome, with their red robes. And so you have that association. And then, as I said earlier, you have the red of secular Esau, which is communism. And so we have all of these associations now that we can look at in retrospect and say, yes, I see what the Lord was saying. And so now it says here that the boys grew and Esau became a cunning hunter. He was a man of the field. In other words, he was a man that was more interested in satisfying his physical desires than anything else. And he loved killing stuff. You know, he just loved going around killing things. And Jacob was it says, plain man dwelling in tents. It just means that Jacob was a simple man. Not stupid, but just liked, you know, simple living, dwelling in tents. Tents is going to become a very defining symbolism for Jacob's children, those 12 tribes, you know, living in tents, Sukkot, you know. And that's going to be important for us at the end, because we're going to be like Jacob. We're actually going to spend 1,260 days living in tents. It's important for us to identify Jacob as the very simple, kind of down-to-earth man who loved dwelling in tents. But there's another meaning for dwelling in tents. The Lord is drawing another distinction here between Esau and Jacob. Esau is all about the world and wanting to conquer the world. And Jacob is just, you know, he just wants to be in the tents learning from the Lord. That dwelling in tents is also a metaphor for studying Torah. Jacob would have had access to the same line of priests that Isaac had access to when he went to study with Shem and Eber, you see. We know that Shem was around when Esau and Jacob were born. How do I know that? Well, because it says in Genesis 11:10 that Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. So that means that Shem was 100 years old at the time of 2 years after the flood. In Genesis 11:11 it says, and Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years. Now, we have not, to this point, gone through 500 years of additional history. Shem has seen the rise of the kingdom of Nimrod. He has witnessed the birth of his grandson Abraham and seen Abraham's journeys. Isaac has gotten to go over and study with Shem and with Eber, who is Shem's son. We can see that Jacob actually probably learned Torah at the knee of Shem. And because of that, we understand that he's got the best education, and now we know what it means when it says that he studied or was a man of the tent. And whose tent was he in? He was in Shem's and Eber's tent. He was in Isaac's tent. Which Torah were they learning in Shem's tent, in Eber's tent, and in Isaac's tent? Well, they were learning all of the Torah that they had at the time. There were some things that they didn't know about at the time, like they didn't understand things that would be future history to them. We get to look back on that history, but they understood the Torah, the calling for altars and for clean animals to be sacrificed, and the, you know, how to treat people and how to love the Lord with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. They were taught all of that. And I'm sure that most of what was in the Torah of Moses is what was taught to them as well. How to sacrifice the clean animals and all of that. What probably was not a part of their Torah, which we can't really know. I'm just speculating right now. But at some point, the Lord told Moses that he was going to put his name someplace, and that would be the only place where you were going to do your sacrificing. These men may or may not have known or understood that part. So there are some things that they may not have known. As we know, the timeline of the earth is a chunk of eternity put in a scale, a time scale, because the Lord wants us to have the opportunity to make decisions. And the only way to have that happen, from the best that we can understand, is for it to happen in time, where you make a decision and then there are consequences of a decision, which, you know, means that's a good reason why we can't make a decision and then go back and do a do-over. No, we have to make good decisions and then move forward. Well, it also, doing that for us personally, also limits what the Lord can give us regarding the Torah. He can't just download the whole Torah to everybody in the beginning. You see, people in the end of days get to know more than what those guys did back there in the beginning. You see, we get to see more of the Lord's plan than they knew. And in fact, we have this example in the book of Daniel, where the Lord gives Daniel prophecies, and Daniel goes, "But I don't understand. What does this mean?" And the angel tells Daniel, "Shut this book up until the time of the end. Somebody else will come along and they'll understand it." So, you see, the Lord has to work in a kind of unfolding his knowledge to people, but that does not mean that there was any lack of knowledge and obedience and understanding on the parts of Shem, Eber, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You see, we have to understand that part of it. So when we say that Jacob was dwelling in the tents, we mean that he was learning the Torah, and he was learning it from Shem and Eber. And at that time, there was a priesthood on the earth. And Now, there's a debate online about this, or, you know, not just online, but among scholars about who was Melchizedek. I believe Melchizedek was the high priest of the order of Melchizedek, and I don't believe that was Shem, although I do believe that Shem was a priest in the order of Melchizedek, and that so was Eber, and when Abraham was blessed by Melchizedek, it means that he was initiated into being a priest of the order of Melchizedek. And so then his successively Isaac, and then Jacob, and then we were going to get the 12 sons, the 12 tribes put into that order of Melchizedek priesthood at Mount Sinai. That was the purpose. The purpose was that the Lord was going to come and dwell with them, and all 12 tribes were going to be his priesthood. But you see, they disqualified themselves because of their actions there. The Lord had a substitute priesthood, and he gave that substitute priesthood to the line of Aaron from the Levites. And he gave service to the tabernacle and the temple to the other Levites who were not of the line of Aaron. We know that dwelling in the tents or studying the Torah has to do with becoming a priest, a royal priesthood, as Peter puts it. And so that's what Jacob was most interested in. By the way, we should probably, you know, try to be as much like Jacob as we could. Jacob was not a perfect man, as you know. I'm a little upset with Jacob for, you know, when he came back from Laban and he kowtowed to Esau 7 times and gave him gifts and tried to placate him and all of that. I don't like that. I don't think that was the thing for Jacob to do. But I also understand that that thing that Jacob did was a prophecy about how the children of Israel would try to placate Esau in the end of days. And so I tend to not want to make too many criticisms and judgments of Jacob because, you know, the Lord just uses everything. But here we see in Genesis 25:28 that Isaac loved Esau because Isaac happened to love venison. Now, you know, venison comes from deer, and deer are clean animals. But a deer cannot be a sacrificial animal because it is hunted. It is not domesticated. All of the clean animals that can be sacrificed to the Lord have to be domesticated animals. Cows, sheep, goats, you see? You can eat non-domesticated animals if they're clean, but you can't sacrifice those animals. Yet Isaac loved venison. He loved that wild meat, it says here, because he did eat of Esau's venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. We see here now the story of Jacob and Esau when Esau comes in from the field and he's faint. And if you listen to my teachings on this, you know that Esau is actually running from two men who are trying to chase Esau down because he has just beheaded Nimrod, king of Babylon. And which, by the way, there's prophecy in that because at the end of days, Esau has to try to take Babylon's throne, which is one of the things that's going on now in the earth. And so we're seeing Esau through Isil trying to take Nimrod's throne at the end of days, and he wants to go and try to take back his heritage that he sold to Jacob. He sold this birthright here, as it says, on the day when Isaac was mourning for the loss of his father Abraham. So now let's go into chapter 26, because it says here that there was a famine in the land, and Isaac, he goes to Abimelech, We learned about Abimelech, king of the Philistines, before. Abimelech is that title of the king to the Philistines. We don't know who the name of the king actually is, and I personally doubt that this Abimelech, king of the Philistines, is the same Abimelech that was the one that had Sarah in his harem there for a little while. But there's a famine in the land. Now, when Abraham ran across the famine in the land, he went to Egypt. But the Lord appears to Isaac and says, don't go to Egypt. Dwell in the land which I shall tell you of. And I will be with you, and I will bless you. And for to you will be the, you know, and to your seed will be this land. And he says, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father, and I will make your seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give to your seed all these countries, meaning the countries that are there in the land. Because, you know, there were Canaanites, and there were Hittites, and there were otherites, and all kinds of ites in the land. And he said, not only to those countries in the area that is Israel, but that Isaac's seed would be in all the nations of the earth. It's the same exact promise that the Lord gave to Abraham. And he says in verse 5, it's because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. Now, this is where we get some understanding that Abraham, who learned from Shem and Eber about the Torah, they had this understanding of commandments, statutes, and laws that the Lord had given, and they lived by them before there ever was a Mount Sinai. And so it says that Isaac dwelt in Gerar, and the men of the place asked him of his wife, and he said, she is my sister. Here is another instance where we see that Isaac did exactly the same thing as Abraham. Yet we know that she is not his sister, which is exactly what Abraham said of Sarah, right? What she is a cousin. She is a cousin, but she is being called here his sister. And it's not a lie. It says he feared to say she is my wife, but he's also not really lying. Now, I know you're going to say, well, the technicality doesn't count. Well, yeah, it does, because she's in covenant with Isaac. Isaac is in covenant with her, not just as his wife, but before the Lord, and also because she's from the same family. He's having to protect her. We have the same situation today. Did you know that you and I are betrothed to Yeshua? Yet he calls us his brethren. He says that all those who believe on him will have the power to become the sons of the living God. Now, wait a minute. Are we, if we're his bride and we're his sons or his brethren, are we also his betrothed? And yes, the answer is yes. So what Isaac is doing here and what Abraham was doing back there is actually prophecy. You know, the Lord has hid his bride in the world, and he tells the world that, you know, we're his betrothed, but that we're also his brethren. And Abraham did the same thing. It's a prophecy. It's not that there's any hanky-panky going on here. And the Lord is not tearing down his Torah here either. He is not saying it's okay to be incestuous. But it said that here that when they saw him sporting with his wife, meaning that, you know, they were kind of playing around, the Philistines called him on it. And we have to go through this whole explanation, and Isaac said, it's because, you know, lest you kill me and I die. Abimelech says that, you know, it was possible for Isaac to bring some kind of guiltiness upon his people. And Abimelech says, you know, to the people, don't touch this man or his wife, or you'll be put to death. And so it says here that Isaac sowed in that land and received in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. You know, when we get to the New Testament, we learn something about the 100-fold and the 60-fold and the 30-fold, right? Let's go and learn about the 100-fold. We're going to go to Matthew chapter 4, verse 20, and it said, "And these are they which are sown on good ground, such as hear the word and receive it and bring forth fruit, some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100." And this is coming from a parable of the word, the seeds that are sown among the thorns. And it says here in this parable that the sower sows the word. It starts in Matthew 4:14. "And these are they by the wayside where the word is sown. But when they have heard, Satan comes immediately and takes away the word that was sown in their heart." And you know the parable there, but it talks about the 30-fold, the 60, and the 100. Well, here with Isaac, we read about him having 100-fold, you see? And so what does that mean when it says that he sold in the land and received in the same year 100-fold? Well, it means that he was obedient. Regardless of the amount of word or the amount of understanding that we have, because, you know, the Lord said, don't go down to Egypt. You know, if Isaac had gone to Egypt and had sown in Egypt, he wouldn't have had 100-fold, right? No, he had to stay in the land and he had to be obedient. And it's according to our obedience that we get the 160 or 30-fold. Because when we hear the word, we can let the cares of the world come and take our blessing away from them, you know, from us rather. Now we know a little bit more about that parable of what it means to bring in 100-fold through perfect obedience, or 60-fold for lesser obedience, and 34-fold for even lesser obedience. Okay, this is important for us to understand when we get over to the place where it says Isaac's eyes were dim. That's coming up here in a little bit, because we're going to see that Isaac had to bless Jacob and Esau. Well, it says there, if we go over to it in chapter 27, it says that his eyes were dim in chapter 27, verse 1. Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see. I don't believe, like some people say, that his discernment had gone. It is the word ra'ah there, which means to see literally or figuratively. But when we get to the Torah portion re'eh, which is also the same word with different vowel spellings, that word re'eh is discernment. This word is ra'ah, and it means literally to see. He wasn't going to be spiritually blind, and he wasn't going to be disobedient. You see, it's important for us to understand in chapter 26 that Isaac was obedient. He sowed in the land and received 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him because of obedience. That's how you get to have 100-fold, by hearing the word and doing the word. Isaac sowed. He didn't let the word fall by the wayside. And so he goes on to, and he's got some troubles with people digging wells, and filling in his wells and taking his wells away and so forth and so on. At the end of chapter 26, verse 34, it said, Esau was 40 years old and he took a wife, Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. You see, Esau here is getting into covenant with Egypt. Not only are these two women, Judith and Bashemath, the daughters of Canaanites, but Canaan and the Hittites were both in league with Egypt. They were both vassals to Egypt. And we're going to find that this is very important when it comes to the teaching of who that Pharaoh was that didn't know Joseph and claimed to not know the Lord, because it is my theory that that guy was an Edomite. And it all started right here in Genesis 26, 34. Now let's go to Genesis 27. Isaac was old and his eyes were dim, not his spiritual sight. That was not dim. He was not able to see Jacob. And so now Rebecca has overheard Isaac ask for Esau to bring him venison, because Isaac has said, I'm going to bless you before I die. Now, I understand everybody's opinion about this, that Rebecca intervened here and she asked Jacob to do something and Jacob obeyed Rebecca. I think that, I'll tell you what I think. I don't think that Isaac was going to give the firstborn blessing to Esau. It just says that he was going to bless Esau. I believe that Jacob was going to be given the firstborn blessing. It's just that Rebecca intervened here. And it probably was not necessary for Rebecca to intervene here. But what we have a tendency in the world to do, and in fact, our brethren and then the Gentiles will say that Jacob was a deceiver. And in fact, Esau will say that about Jacob. And so when you say that about Jacob, then you're agreeing with Esau. Trust me, you don't want to be on that side of the fence. You want to be on the side that stands with Jacob. Now, down here in verse 33, after Isaac finds out that it was Jacob that he gave the blessing to, it says, Isaac trembled exceedingly. Now, people use that to say that he was trembling because he was upset that he had not given the blessing to Esau because Jacob deceived him. I don't think so. I don't think it was because Jacob deceived him. Hear me out. Here's what that word is. That word trembled is the Hebrew word karad. It's Strong's 27:29, and it says fear. It means to shudder with terror, hence to fear, to be afraid. Isaac, I believe, made a decision. You see, when Rebecca was pregnant, after Isaac had gone to intercede for her, and then she had gone for herself, when she was pregnant, do you not think that she told Isaac what was going on and what the father had said, that there are going to be two nations and the younger will serve the older? You see, let's go back there to that. It's in chapter 25. Let's go down to verse 23. And it says, and the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb and two manner of people shall be separated from your bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Now we get here to the time for the blessing in chapter 27. And don't you think that after Isaac, we know, has been studying the Torah, Isaac has sown in the land and he's reaped 100-fold. Remember, the birds didn't come and take away any of the word from Isaac. And all we have here is that his eyes were dim. His seeing eyes were dim. You know, his literal eyes were dim, not his spiritual eyes. And so, do you really think that he intended to give that blessing to Esau? I don't. But I think Rebecca was the one who was out of line here. I think that, you know, sometimes she's actually the epitome of how we all get in front of the Lord. You know, we all do it. We're the bride and we tend to want to get in front of our husband, don't we? Rebecca, she was his bride, his wife, and she wanted to get in front of Isaac and make sure that everything was going to be taken care of. So she is the one that set this up. Let's stop blaming Jacob and let's stop blaming Isaac and saying that he was too dull to know what was going on because his discernment was gone. And let us understand that down here in the passage where it says that he trembled, that Isaac trembled, that he was having a hard time because now all of a sudden he's awoken and realized he made a mistake. No, it was at that moment that he was terrorized. He was fearful because he knew that Esau could have killed him at that moment, you see. And furthermore, let's remember that Esau is associated with terror down here at the end of days. Can we not see that this is prophetic of our terror and fear of Esau at the end of days? And so this is a very human reaction that Isaac had to tremble and to be afraid of his own son. But it does not indicate to me that Isaac would have given Esau the firstborn blessing. I just don't believe that about Isaac. And here we are again on the third week in a row, me trying to help you to understand that the Lord did not start out with bad stock in the beginning. You know, if you start with a bad product in the beginning, it only goes down from there. So when you start with something, you want to start with the best, the cream of the crop, because you know that as it continues and continues, you know, it's probably going to get flaws. It's kind of like you've got the original piece of paper and you make a copy of that, and then you make a copy of that, and then you make a copy of the next one and the next one until finally you've got something that you can barely read. And so that's why you and I have to be born again of the Spirit, because we have to become an original copy. You see what I'm saying? And we have to pass through Isaac, who has to be the cream of the crop. So we can't be going around saying Abraham was a liar and a coward, and Isaac was a liar and a coward, and Isaac loved Esau more, so that's there's a fault in him. We can't do that. We've got to stop that nonsense. And by the way, I believe that, you know, oh, I think when we get into the kingdom and we have a chance to talk with these people, we'll be able to then get the full understanding of just which part of this was spiritual and which part of it was physical. Because Isaac made a spiritual decision knowing, I believe he knew that was Jacob. He said, that's Jacob's voice. But he went ahead and blessed him anyway. I think Isaac surmised what was going on, and he just went ahead and blessed Jacob like he intended to in the first place. But that, you know, when it came time to stand up for his spiritual decision with Esau, he became afraid and trembled. Now, I'm not trying to beleaguer these points. I'm just trying to point out to you that, you know, we owe a higher amount of respect to our forefathers than what we give to them. But we see here in this Torah passage that Esau says that it is Jacob that has supplanted him in verse 36. But you see, The weakness that Isaac shows is actually in verse 35, where he says, "Your brother came in subtly." That word is bamirma, and it's from the Hebrew word mirma. In the interlinear, it's bamirma, and it means that he came in to be crafty or to be deceitful, and that he came in disguised as you. That's what Isaac is saying. His biggest weakness right here is that he was fearful for his life, like he was with Abimelech. He was fearful for his life, and who would not be with Esau, knowing who Esau was? But this is also our biggest clue that tells us that Isaac knew it was Jacob. He's right here, he's saying to Isaac, he came disguised. What he's not saying is, I knew that he came disguised. Do you see the point that I'm trying to make? But I'm telling you, Isaac's weakness was not that he was going to give Esau that blessing. I might get my correction in the kingdom, but until the Lord tells me that that's what was going to happen there, and until I hear it from Isaac's mouth, I'm not going to believe it of my forefathers. My forefathers were much better upstanding men than what Esau says they were, what the world says they were, and what many of my own brethren says they were. Okay, so now let's go on to chapter 28. You know, we've already learned that Esau took Canaanite wives at the end of chapter 27. And can you imagine if Isaac had given that blessing to Esau and then Esau went out and got Canaanite wives? Do you not understand that that's the line the Messiah comes through? And so here in chapter 28, verse 1, it says, Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, "Don't take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Go back to where? The family. Go back to your mother's father's house. Go to your grandfather's house, okay? And talk to her brother, Laban, and get your wives from there." Again, we see the same pattern with the Lord taking the bride from within the family. Again, not everybody in the family is going to be the bride. They're all in the family. They're all going to be in the kingdom, but they're not going to be the bride. There has to be a qualification. You have to be willing to be a person of the tents. You have to be willing to sow 100-fold or to sow in the land and bring home 100-fold. In other words, you have to be willing to be obedient to what you hear. And so you don't get the bride is not everybody, you see. So he's got to go to, and by the way, he does obey his father, doesn't he? And Isaac tells him that if he goes over to get his bride from Laban's house, it says here from the daughters of Laban. Now, there are a lot of people that say that Leah and Rachel were already betrothed to Esau and to Jacob. Rachel was for Jacob and Leah was for Esau. And this is one of the reasons why Laban would have wanted to marry off Leah to Jacob first, because Esau didn't come to get Leah, did he? In essence, that means that Laban made Jacob responsible for Esau's failure. So anyway, there's some little detail about that. But Isaac promises him that if he will be obedient, that God will bless him. And it says there, what it actually says in the interlinear is that El Shaddai, God Almighty, will bless you. This is one of those instances where we see that while they understood the whole spiritual principle and were obedient to the Lord and they got the Torah, we see here that they did not yet call the Lord Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. They called him El Shaddai. And in fact, In the book of Shemot, Exodus, when Moses is dealing with the Lord and the Lord is dealing with Moses, we get this understanding. He says, no one has known me by this name, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, before now. And he even says, Abraham didn't, and so forth. And so we see here that Isaac is blessing Jacob, and he tells Jacob that he's going to receive the blessing of Abraham. So he's passing on even more to Jacob than what was given in the original blessing. And so it says, Isaac sent Jacob away. And so he goes to be with Laban and to get a wife from the family. And it says that when Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Paddan Aram to take him a wife from there, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, you shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan, and that Jacob obeyed his father and his mother and was gone to Paddan Aram. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac, his father, then went Esau to Ishmael and took unto the wives which he already had Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebayoth, to be his wife. So he was that much more rebellious, Esau was. And so we now know what kind of man Esau was, and aren't we glad and can't we praise the Lord that Isaac did have the spiritual discernment, even if he was a little bit afraid for his life afterward with Esau. You and I are going to have plenty of time coming up in the next few years to be afraid of Esau. So let's not be so hard on Isaac. It's easy for us to be hard on other people when we're not in that situation, but we're gonna have our chance to be such a frightened people as well. But not to worry, our bridegroom will come and save us from Esau. I hope this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Shalom.